Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts hold your word for us this day, God. The word you want to speak to us, the word we need to hear. We trust you, O God, our hope, our redeemer, our sustainer. Amen. In ancient times, maps had a name for territory that had not yet been explored. Places that were past where the map makers knew about. What lay beyond the known world might be either land or sea, but it couldn't be charted because they hadn't seen what was out there. What they did know was that it was dangerous. Because, well, everything we don't know much about seems a little dangerous. And so they would write on the map, beyond the familiar places, "Here be dragons. Here be dragons." It feels sometimes like we live in that territory, don't you think? Especially when a storm hits our lives, when we are buffeted by winds and rain that are out of our control. We can be driven to a place where the road that we have been following seems to end. Our next steps are into a landscape we have not entered before. The landmarks and road signs that have guided us have disappeared. They don't provide any clear way or the direction that we need. Now what? In fact, I think we live in this uncharted territory more often than we're conscious of. Every day presents us with questions about how we will behave in situations that we have not seen before. Every interaction with another person, even someone as familiar as your spouse or your child, or that coworker who has been sitting in the next cubicle for years, requires a new choice at every moment about who you will be, how you will respond. Imagine this. You're driving, and the driver next to you tries to turn into your lane, never even turns on their turn indicator. You could slow down and let that car in, or speed up and assert your right to the 15 feet of pavement in front of you. You don't know the driver of that car. You've never seen him or her before in your life. But instantly, unconsciously, your brain sifts through its online history for similar experiences, previous decisions, stereotypes to guide your action. You look quickly at the driver. "Oh yeah," you say, probably not out loud. "You did that because you're a pushy woman or an aggressive man. You're too young to be driving, or maybe you're too old to be driving." Or all those gas-guzzling SUV drivers are the same. And if you already think that every person who fails to use their signal light is a jerk, or that every driver who doesn't anticipate their next turn ahead of time is unqualified to be on the road, you're likely to respond the same way, whether or not the driver of that car just arrived from another country and doesn't know this city at all, or has a crying baby in the back seat. Your action isn't about what's going on in someone else's car. It's about what's going on inside of you. If you want to insist that driving be done the right way, you'll speed up every time. You'll make sure that driver doesn't get any space on the road that she doesn't deserve. And if you did that, you would be following the law. You'd actually be enforcing the law in some way, making sure that orderly driving is maintained. Jesus was all about challenging order for the sake of something more important. He told stories that had surprising, unexpected endings. He reminded people that the way they'd always done things before was not necessarily God's way. He showed them how to look for and see something holy in situations they thought were way off the holiness map. In the sermon that Jesus gave up on the mountain, the text that Daniel read today, and that we will be reading together all through the weeks of Lent, Jesus was talking to people who were pretty sure that they already had what God required of them. The road that had been built by their scriptures and their traditions stretched way back into their history and way out in front of them, as far as they could ever imagine going. I don't know if you can see this, but this, by the way, is one of my favorite road signs. It happens just before Sacramento, and the last line says, Ocean City, Maryland, 3,073 miles. Just like us, those people who heard the Sermon on the Mount, sometimes their lives worked well and sometimes they didn't, but I guess those people would say that they had just about the right number of rules to keep life orderly and predictable. I have not come to demolish the scriptures or your tradition, Jesus began. That's good, the people thought. We don't need anyone dismantling things. The old laws have been working just fine. But Jesus kept going. What I came to do, he said, is to complete your picture of God. I know you have rules that tell you what you have to do to keep God from being angry with you. But there's something beyond rules. You can live in a way that will make you God's partner, help accomplish what God hopes for in creation. What I'm talking about, he said, can't be contained on the map of familiar territory or in an instruction manual. It's thinking a whole new way. It's going out beyond where the current road ends. And then Jesus went on to give them some specific examples. You know that law that says don't murder? That law is right. It's a good thing not to murder. But you know what would really make a difference? Rooting out the anger that leads to violence. The point of the law isn't to enforce murder statutes. It's to reconcile people, to create right relationships. That's what matters to God. Jesus goes on to say similar things about divorce and adultery, obeying orders from people who are above you in the hierarchy, enforcement of property rights, dealing with people who are, it seems like, are out to get you. Every one of those lessons, Jesus began with the words, "You have heard it said." And then he continued with, "But I say." In every instance, he seemed to be saying, it isn't technical compliance with the rules of your tradition or the law that matters to God. It's a different mindset. It's committing with your whole heart to well-being, your own, creations, other people's, even your enemies. This is definitely off the map for us. It's hard for us to get our arms around Jesus' message in any way that sounds like concrete, practical advice, especially 2,000 years later. And sometimes the words seem hopelessly obscure to us. We want something that reads like a map, reliable, easily readable navigation device, because we live in a confusing world. We'd like the Bible to be a neater package of timeless wisdom and moral certainty, sort of a divinely inspired chicken soup for the soul. But the Bible is not that. It's full of tangled up wild poetry, stories of unruly characters who weren't much better at channeling God than we are, contradictions, images that throw us off balance. It's not a master plan. It's a collection of stories about what life looks like with a God who is always alive, always moving, always just beyond our grasp. The Bible's stories are a map that show us a road traveled by people who came before us and who are also looking for God. That road began in the distant past and it continues all the way to the present, but it is not finished. It doesn't project itself into the future because it can't. No road can do that. This is a problem for people who require clarity, who look to the Bible for a fixed and unchanging moral code to live by, a predictable road with well-marked signs. People who look for order and predictability from their religion tend to find it, maybe impose it on the Bible, to read its stories in a way that tames and domesticates them until the road ahead looks identical to the landscape of the past. That's not faith in God. That's faith in a book. People who find themselves at home in a church like this, a tradition that reads the Bible a little less literally, tend to be more comfortable with leaving some open space on the map, room to imagine that God speaks to us in new ways that sometimes reflect biblical stories and sometimes do not. We pay attention to our own experience about how God is leading us now and will lead us in the future. Sometimes even more than we do and trust the experiences of people who came before us and whose stories make up our tradition. But this too can be misleading. In 1985, University of California sociologist Robert Bella wrote Habits of the Heart, a book about patterns of religion and spirituality in the United States since this country was founded. Americans at the end of the 20th century, he said, tend to think of religion as a private matter. They're often not looking to a church for shared beliefs. Bella used the example of a young woman he named Sheila to illustrate his point. Sheila would say, "I believe in God. I'm not a religious fanatic. I can't remember the last time I went to church or read the Bible. But my faith has carried me a long way. Just my own little voice. It's just try to love yourself and be gentle with yourself. You know, I guess take care of each other." I think he would want us to take care of each other. Sheilaism is the name that Bella gave to this religion. Sheilaism has no sacred text, a god with no particular history. It's good for Sheila, but it doesn't gather a community around it because it doesn't need one. Only Sheila knows what Sheilaism demands of her, and she only knows what that is when something doesn't feel right to her. Whether you've heard of Sheilaism or not, I bet you know people who follow their own version of it. Maybe you've tried it for yourself. And it can carry you for a while. But this too is not faith in God. It's faith in yourself. If we are people willing to stay on the road beyond the edge of our known world, we need a map to point us in the right direction. That's what we do in church. We read the map. We tell the stories of people who have sought truth and found God before us, even the stories about how they failed, and even the parts of the Bible that we don't understand right away. Because all of those stories show us something that we can't always see for ourselves, about who God is, about what God looks like, where God shows up. These stories tell us timeless truths that we will need as we enter the unknown territory ahead. That God has come into the world, our world, and enters it again and again to find us and to give our lives meaning. That what matters to God is right relationship, the kind of love that brings forgiveness and reconciliation and peace. And that what our faith calls us to is to trust the God who promises, even beyond where the road ends, even beyond death, that all shall be well. Amen.